Welcome to South End Supporters, a St. Louis City SC podcast powered by Ready to Live Wellness. David Heck alongside Eric Cole. Eric, how are we this evening, sir?
Boy, we had a rough week. Today was not as much fun show prep. Rewatching two losses and then a team that you don't care about, not as much fun.
Not at all. Man, we were there in attendance at City Park. I was back in the South End, 149, row two. Brought the kids Saturday. Really looking forward to it. Really nice evening. Turned into a really not fun time for most everybody in the stadium, except for like the one LAFC guy that was sitting a row in front of us, a few seats over.
Just stoic.
Did not make a face the entire game. Respect him.
I tell you what, man. Like, I don't know what was almost more disrespectful, the fact that he did, like, he would have been cheering, or the way he just, after that goal, was nodding, just not making a noise, just nodding like, oh, yeah. They're coming, and it was just like, I almost take that as more disrespectful.
I agree. It was it was tough to watch, and it got just really tough to watch, I think, as the game progressed. We'll talk about plenty of issues that we had with the referee, Joe Dickerson, who is a familiar face to City Park and one that is probably not going to be welcomed with a lot of enthusiasm in the future.
Those weren't his first ref you suck chance that happened to him before.
That's what I thought. Do want to cover this, like a new segment, not a segment, let's call it format, new format, a little format shift, Eric. We're going to start running two episodes per week. And I think that the reason why is we've been going like a marathon episodes, like an hour 15, hour and a half, which are much longer than what we used to be running. And part of it is like, I like just kind of, you know, shooting it with you and Dave, the Monday morning center back, who's been a big part of this show the last couple of weeks. And so we end up cramming this segment or two segments into the final part of the show, and it ends up running really long. I'd like to spend more time on that, and I think we can probably get a little bit more in-depth on that stuff, too, if we just split that up into another show. So how we're going to start running this moving forward, we're gonna cover the episodes just like we've always done, this time not one, Eric, but two losses to discuss.
Yep.
We'll get into the news. We're actually going to bring back Dave to do the news segment with us. I think he'll be able to bring a lot of insight to that. And then after that, we'll go into on Thursday or Friday, we'll drop another episode covering the game that will be coming up. And then we'll include the Felix's Pizza Pub South End Submissions in that. So the postal preview will be there. The South End Submissions brought to you by Felix's Pizza Pub will be there. That will happen towards the end of the week, which will give people something to look forward to and kind of prep, get you ready for the game that's coming up on that Saturday.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there was times where, I mean, it became so much fun talking with each other that we were running long, and I almost found myself not bringing up points to try and even save time. And I almost hated like driving on the way home and being like, man, I really wanted to talk about that or talk about this. But we were here for so long that we were trying to we like to think that everybody loves to listen to us for 2 hours, but sometimes that could be a little tough. And
I agree.
Breaking it up a little bit will give people just that much more South End Supporters to look forward through throughout the week.
Yeah, so if you've had South End Submissions put them out there this week for tonight's episode, those will air again Thursday or Friday. We got to talk about when we're going to release that episode.
And it'll give people more time to send them in. Submit, all that type of stuff.
Exactly. So I think everybody's going to like the new format. I know we will as well. It's just going to be a little bit better. I think it'll flow better as well. Eric, I said we were in City Park on Saturday night. We were actually there on Wednesday night.
I know.
My bad on that one. Two defeats Wednesday and Saturday for City. The good news is they didn't drop in the table. They're still ninth. They sit with 16 points, 3 wins. 3 losses now and 7 draws. The first one we'll talk about is that LAFC 2-0 defeat. Eric, a very familiar 4-2-3-1. We've seen it consistently. The only change here was Nielsen came in for Hebert. So you had Berkey, Markanic, Nielsen, Parker, Totland, Ostrak, Durkin, Celio, Vasilev, Alm, and Klaus. This is similar to what you and Dave, I feel like, talked about the week before.
Yeah, no surprises. Kind of like we've always said that, you know, once Nielsen gets up to match fitness, I personally kind of put him ahead of Hebert. And that's also tough because Hebert's been playing pretty well in his natural center back position. I think as far as defense goes at the moment, that's, you know, our strongest starting lineup that we can put out there. And, you know, again, you're starting to see that cohesion with that starting 11. You want these guys getting more and more comfortable playing with each other, and it was kind of working there for a while. So there wasn't any real need to over-rotate or do anything like that.
LAFC came into this game winless on the road. Eric, I'm not sure if you knew that or not. But
yeah, they said it plenty of times on the broadcast, winless. Which was annoying, knowing the final outcome.
They're no longer, spoiler alert, they're no longer winless on the road. After a win there. City came out pretty strong, I thought. I thought they looked good in the first half. Definitely the first, like, half of the first half. They really looked good. You just start with, like, the eighth minute. You had a shot there on goal from Durkin outside the box, right at Hugo, is it Lloris?
Lloris,
mm-hmm. Yes. Hugo Lloris. But then it really got interesting in that 12th minute. And this was one that I think could have turned the tides for the entire game. And it felt like a momentum shift the wrong direction, unfortunately.
Yeah, right.
Corner from Celio, headed out of the box. Klaus gets on the other end of it and sent it in and across. And a handball was called. Mm-hmm. Initially, you know, not called, but they went and headed and took a look at it, spent some time in that VAR, and ruled a handball, giving Klaus an opportunity to score a PK. He does this little stutter step, which we've seen him do in the past, and Lloris guessed right. It seemed like he might have telegraphed it a bit. Break this one down for us.
Yeah, this was tough to see from the south end. We just see a stoppage in play, and we're all kind of like, my first thoughts was either handball, or my worry was some sort of like infraction off the ball, which would have been like a red card for some sort of violent conduct. So then we see him going up. As he's walking over, you're trying to like read the body languages of all the players on the field, and it started looking more like LAFC was more upset. So then we started getting really excited. Sure enough, handball. And Campos in the slow-mo, you do see as he's jumping, hands are kind of out in an unnatural position up by his head. So it's a correct call in the box. We're thinking, oh, man, this is just what we needed. Start off on a hot note. It was kind of a little both teams feeling each other out up until that point. And then... yeah, Klaus does his, you know, typical stutter step. And the thing is with that is you're just looking for the goalie to give anything away. And as we touched on last week, Hugo Lloris is a veteran, World Cup winner. I mean, and he's made quite a few penalty saves, if I'm not mistaken, over his career. So, I mean, it was just a who's going to blink first. And unfortunately, Lloris doesn't blink. And with that stutter step, what you lose is all sort of momentum on the shot. And if you're going to get it there, you're going to kind of have to place it pretty well. And I mean, he picks a corner okay, but just not far enough from a correct guessing Lloris, and it's saved. Follow-up is saved as well, and boy, it felt like the air was let out of the stadium for a little bit right after that. It was just kind of like, I think everybody kind of felt like that could have been a big moment in the game, and to see it kind of go squandered there was kind of like, oh no.
Eric, analytics have taken over sports, right? You see it in just about every sport. I don't think soccer is any different there, but also video. Like, when I think about baseball players, even now you're seeing it, especially like designated hitters. I mean, they're watching the video of the pitcher on iPads after at bats, right? Between innings, that sort of thing. How much of that do you think goes into this when you're looking at a guy that, you know, is likely going to take PKs? Are they looking at tendencies? I'm sure there's data on that to back it up, but like, when he stutter stepped, you mentioned he didn't blink. Like, he didn't flinch. Like, there was no movement at all. It was like he was expecting it, and then immediately goes to that post there on the lower, I guess, near post or whatever it would have been. Are they paying attention to that kind of stuff? Do they have an idea of the tendency of these guys typically?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Some goalkeepers, you'll even see on their water bottle, like, they'll have it broke down on who their most likely penalty takers are, which side they prefer. I mean, the goalies, that's one of the big things that they will study in between games. And I think one thing that you could maybe analyze from the two PKs that Klaus has taken, he does the same stutter step. The last one they showed, it was pretty much straight down the middle. But I think maybe if I'm Lloris going into this, I'm thinking, okay, he's going to stutter step. He doesn't really get a lot of power behind it after he does. It's try to placement. So I'm sure he's thinking, just don't move. You probably, with your length and your agility, can probably get to this if you read him up until he kicks it. So that's for sure something that I'm sure he studied and, you know, analyzed going in. He had to assume that if, you know, without our normal penalty taker and Leuven on the field, Klaus is going to be the one who steps up and takes it. So he was probably watching, you know, tendencies from, you know, the times he's taken it over the past, which has been, I think, only a handful, I think two, if that. But who knows if he even watched back in the day. I mean, they'll go all the way back and try and get any sort of step up in that situation.
Markkanen gets the rebound and gets a shot on net. Unfortunately, saved. Again, not a great angle there. But this just had that feel of like a big momentum shift at this point, right? You get the PK. This should be a goal. Like, I think the expected goal on it I saw was like 77% or something. It seems like it should be higher than that even. Like, I very rarely have these ever saved. You don't get it. Again, you get the rebound, a save there again. And just like that, I mean, it's like, man, this, I just felt like momentum-wise, this isn't good because, you know, you and Dave broke down, I think, the attack that LAFC possesses the week before. Denny Bouanga, who we're going to say his name a couple of times, unfortunately. It's hard to keep that guy out of the back of the net. Like, you got to be able to capitalize as soon as possible when you've got chances like this.
And especially that's been a struggle that we've kind of had this year, is capitalizing on said chances that when they come around. And so you also, which was weird because it looked like the possession rating in game was pretty, you know, split down the middle, which we weren't really expecting. We were expecting LA to kind of hold the ball a little bit longer. But then at the same time, kind of like we touched on the preview, like they're kind of similar style to us, to where they just kind of look to get it and go. But I feel like they possess it a little bit more than us. So I remember at one point, I forget if it was in the first half or the second half, they put the possession stats up on the big screen, which I do like that they're starting to do that in City Park, is putting different stats up throughout the game on the big screen in between plays and stuff. But City had majority of the possession. And I think you touched on it right at the beginning of this show. I really don't feel like we necessarily played bad, not only just in the first half, but throughout the entire game. I thought it was a good competitive battle back and forth. I think, you know, we definitely could have looked at capitalizing on a few more chances and just being a little bit more clinical in the final third, which is, again, is something that we've struggled on throughout the year. But you're right. That was an instance where maybe it's just like history throughout the season and what we've seen. You just kind of got this feeling like, I hope that doesn't come back to bite us later on.
You mentioned City with possession. They did outpossess LAFC. 54% of the possession went in City's favor. They had 14 shots to LAFC's 12, and 7 of those were on net, just 3 for LAFC. So, again, I mean, all things considered, when you just look at the stats themselves, it would appear like City would have gotten the best of them. City had more corners. They had more crosses. I mean, everything just seemed to go in their favor. Unfortunately, some weird stuff started happening towards the end of this thing that, you know, led to a poor result. But, you know, all in all, and I think that, you know, South End Stan, man, he texted us midway through midway through halftime probably. We're sitting around, and he's like, I think City's out playing LAFC. And I agree. Like, I think they, for the most part, looked like the better side for most of that first half.
I think a big sign that also showed me that we were doing something right is, I want to say about like the 30th minute, they actually switched Bouanga onto the right side, our left side, onto Markkanen's side, which told me like they were seeing something in, we were highlighting that all leading up to the game, the big battle that was going to be between Totlin and Bouanga. And he was shutting him down. He was staying on him. He was not allowing him the things that get him the space to be creative. And they were noticing that. But they were also noticing that Oliveira was kind of having his way with Markkanen out on the left. And I think they looked at that Boang is just a little bit more dangerous. Get him out there and get him on the ball that much more. And so to me, that was almost a good sign showing that, okay, what they want to happen isn't happening, and it's because of what we're doing.
We've said a lot about Roman Berkey on this podcast throughout the past year plus we've been doing this show for. For a guy that's given up 5 goals in his last 2 games, essentially, he's played pretty well at times. Now, we'll get into the game against Cincinnati, which he was brilliant in.
Yeah.
Had one save in this when it came in the second minute of stoppage time, outside the box. Berkey just laying out for it to make an amazing save. I don't think we can say enough about this guy.
I mean, it's unfortunately that we keep having to say so much about this guy, but yeah, it's great knowing that, like we always said in the past with any team, I think when Chicago was coming into town, we said they had a tendency to shoot outside the box a lot whenever they got space. And it's great knowing that you kind of almost have that confidence of like, yeah, okay, Berkey's back there. We'll be, you know, he'll be able to handle it. And yeah, it's just unfortunate that he's not getting the stat recognition of what these performances are coming by for him. I remember last year they touched on it and they were like goalkeeper of the year, but they were like, he only has 8 clean sheets last year. Yeah. And they were all surprised by that because of how well he performs. And it's just a bummer to see that. You know, while it's great that he's back there and bails us out quite a bit, it's also a bummer to not reflect that with clean sheets for him with these performances.
I get asked all the time where the best place is to watch City games, and the answer is always the same. It's Felix's Pizza Pub, and it's not even close. Not only can you watch every single home and away City game surrounded by fans, but you can do it while enjoying the best pizza in the area. Now, I like the Murphy Pie, which is chicken, wing sauce, green onions, blue cheese, and jalapeno ranch. But maybe that's not your thing. Maybe you're more of a fan of a traditional pizza. Then check out the Dogtown with Italian sausage, pepperoni, and pepper bacon. Or maybe you're like my partner Eric over here and you like a little bit of both. It doesn't matter what your tastes are because you can order any of the pizzas at Felix's by the slice. But it is no ordinary slice. Felix's offers the largest slice you are going to find anywhere in St. Louis. So mix and match. Try different pizzas. Just make sure to save room for their award-winning double trashed wings in buffalo, jalapeno ranch, or Thai chili. And if you're looking for something to do during the week, head to Felix's every Tuesday night for Stoned Trivia to test your knowledge in the most fun bar trivia around. Even if you're not a trivia buff, you can still win great prizes, so show up at 7 and be ready to have some fun. It's Felix's Pizza Pub, located at 6401 Clayton Avenue in Dogtown, and check them out online at Felix's Dogtown. Yeah, I agree. Eric, I got up to go grab some popcorn for my son right after this. I wanted to beat the rush, right? Yeah. That was the big thing. Hey, we want to beat the rush. South End, it gets busy out there, even though Farm Truck's not there anymore. Still gets pretty packed.
Plus, he was going to stay on you until you got
He that wanted popcorn. That popcorn, man. He wanted the $20 popcorn in the souvenir thing or whatever. You
he
know?
Almost left it. I was like, boy, you better go back
I
and
know.
Grab
I
that. Still,
you know, I have two of these things now. I don't know what I'm going to do. Maybe pot some plants or something. I don't know. But anyway.
I'll take one if you don't want
we, okay, I'll give you one. It's going to cost you like 10 bucks, though, I think.
Okay.
I get up and all of a sudden I hear the music, right, and the crowd play. Hey, we do it for fun, right? Oh, my goodness, we got a goal. And I'm like, there's no TVs where we were at. I couldn't see it, what was going on. I think that's one thing I'm going to put on my survey for this year. They need more television set up around the concourse at City
On the
Park.
South End. They do have them when yeah. I was in the ice cream line. Yep. They had them there. Thank God.
They don't have them on the South, at least not where I was at.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a goal, Mark Hanek, amazing, right? Like, and I couldn't believe it that it actually had happened. We, again, continue to struggle the rest of this half, it seemed like, after that one was called back initially. Or sorry, with Klaus anyway on the on not being able to score there, but unfortunately this thing gets called back and they call it a handball, and it's just like that. It's like they take the goal off, and super super frustrating.
You should probably be happy that they did call it back, because I was going to make you stay up on the concourse for the rest of the game. But yeah, it was again tough one to see for us with it being on the north end. Just a lot of confusion. No way you could tell from our angle that it was a handball call. And it just didn't really look like it, because it just looked like a 50-50 header that just happened to fall down to Markanic's feet. Good on him. Quick reaction. Finishes it near post. We were like, okay, good. You know, put that whole Klaus thing behind us, which, you know, City kind of did. But it was like, good, put that out. You know, come out strong the second half, especially going into half, late half like that, and pulling one out. It was just... elation, and then you see the checks, and it's just like
it seemed like it took forever.
That one felt longer. And the other thing that I'm really confused on is players aren't supposed to be like able to see the screens. I've seen yellow cards given out because players got too close, and Joe Dickerson didn't seem to care at all that they were looking over his shoulder, which I think maybe he couldn't see them because he missed a lot of calls that night. So maybe he's got some vision issues.
Well, I think they blended
like
in with the pitch itself, those jerseys.
Yeah, we're going to have to break down ugly jerseys throughout the year, because those weren't great. But that's another issue I have. If the team's jerseys don't clash with the team that you're playing, they do it in every other league. They wear their preferred home kit. I know you want to try and get your both jerseys enough exposure, but like, that black and gold of LA just looks so clean.
LAFC's home jerseys, one of the best looking in the league. The away one they wear is horrendous.
It's like night and day.
Oh,
like,
my
it's
God.
Just, but the other thing, I know there's probably some league-wide that they don't want things like that being shown on. I would have loved to have seen that in stadium, even though it still would have been tough to tell, because even rewatching it, it took quite a few angles to truly see this. And because when he does head it looks like it originally comes off the defender's back and then goes down, But what you do see is it does hit his hand. I guess you could say it's in an abnormal, you know, position. By the rule, technically, yes, it is a handball. But for us in stadium, we were, you know, going into half, we were kind of like, man, you almost felt like we got, you know, not screwed on two calls, but like let down on two big plays that you think about had both those been finished off, what that game really would have looked like.
Yeah, unfortunate for sure. Did you think it was a handball after seeing everything?
After seeing it, yeah. I mean, by the rule.
Yeah.
By the rule.
Whatever that means.
We've also seen, yeah, that was a big discussion at half, is just, you know, again, what is a handball? Because people are showing, like, I love also now, there must be like a slight delay from in stadium to there, because all throughout the night, a theme on was everybody would pull up their phone in the Apple broadcast to try and see, you know, replays.
I was
and stuff
doing
like, you were doing that. People around us were doing that. And the original ones we saw, you couldn't really tell. But rewatching it back by the rule, which is also, it sucks because there's been so many other calls that we that have gone against us that I felt were way less than that, and either not given or it's just, it's such a, it's got to be the most frustrating rule.
It's frustrating. In the it's league. Subjective. There's a lot of things. At least they look at it. I mean, VAR should get it right. But it, you're right. It does seem like there are some inconsistencies. So unfortunately, instead of 1-0 City, with a possibility of 2-0 City, things aren't going the way of the home side at this point. You go in scoreless at the half, and then all of a sudden the Denny Bouanga show begins. We get into the 59th. We'll just go straight to there, Eric. Ball played in over the top, and after settling it, had I think it was on a second touch, had just Berkey to beat, got past the defense, looked like a breakdown here defensively, and went near post for the goal.
Yeah, the issue here is Markanic goes to step up, and they kind of highlighted this on the broadcast, is there was no real reason to step up at that point. He there was no offsides trap really being played by the rest of the defenders. That's just a little bit of inexperience, you would say, on his half. So he steps up, which Bouanga's still on side with the rest of the defenders in the line, so his momentum's completely going forward. Ball and Bouanga are completely going the opposite way, so he's just got to step up on him. And like we've said, he's got that speed and he's got that power. He settles it in and just hits it with ferocity at the near post. Berkey's not getting on that one, especially from that range. And man, it was just a frustration to feel like you go into half thinking, man, we could have been up 2-0 to now, not long after half, we're down 1-0 and kind of off a defensive breakdown. It's just frustrating.
And it didn't get any better, Eric. It didn't get any better. It got weirder. It didn't get any better. It got more frustrating. We got to spend like the back part of this episode talking about all the stuff that went on with Dickerson and these cards. It began with Markanic, unfortunately, was playing on a yellow, and in the 75th, got blown for another yellow, which was a second, gave him a red. So now he's out the rest of the game. You're down 1-0. You know, you lose a guy who at this point, honestly, maybe outside of that one breakdown you just mentioned, I thought it played pretty well. He had been involved offensively as well. Had a goal taken back, unfortunately. he probably is more of an offensive threat than, you know, he is known for his defense always, you know. But I've kind of liked him ever since he's come into the league, and or not into the league, but with City, I should say. But unfortunately, this took place, and man, I cannot for the life of me still figure out why this was given.
It was right in front of us, and so originally we were all cheering because we thought we got the free kick.
I don't know if this was, and I went back and watched it on video a couple of times, and I can't hear it, but I felt like I could hear like shins collide whenever it would happen right in front of us, right?
Yeah.
And this is when I pulled my phone out to take a look at it, and I was scrolling through. I'm like, everybody behind me and you, everybody next to me was like watching the replay of it, and nobody could figure it out. I felt like I heard the shins collide, and like there was like a crash sound that would not have been from him hitting this guy in the face. Like, there's just no way. He didn't hit him that hard, you know? So to me, it felt like that foul should have happened like immediately there, but that wasn't what it was. So you're right. When the whistle blew initially and then the card, you know, he's pulling out the yellow, it's like, okay, this is going to go to LAFC. It wasn't the case.
Yeah, because it looked like it was even a little bit late on the tackle just from our angle in stadium. And so then, yeah, when he comes over and throws it, and at this point, Markanic is separated from the rest of the crowd. So when he walks over, like, past everybody else and goes to him, it's like, wait, this is going against us. And again, in stadium, no replays or anything. We're trying to look at a phone. And again, you're also trying to look real quick, but also, like, keep up with when play resumes. And even watching this back, I understand the arm comes back and makes contact with the face. But to me, A, I don't think this is in any way with a malicious intent. And you can tell, like, malicious intent and everything with that. So to give it, like, straight off of that, but not only that, to give that as a second yellow, I would have maybe understood first yellow. He's been warned a couple times, you know, with that kind of stuff. And Mark Hanna can get a little wild with his tackles sometimes. But
he was not the one tackling. He was getting tackled.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying, like, reputation-wise, yeah. He's got... But to me, as a referee, I don't think you ever lose a game because of a referee. But I do think a game can be shifted by referee decisions. And this is a big case of that. And it was kind of throughout the night. But to give a second yellow on that and completely change the trajectory of a good battled game going on at the time, it just was like, that was what really just got me. Is like, this big of a decision... On some, like, there was no hesitation either. It didn't look like he even, like, gave it a thought. He ran straight over to Mark. Like, the card was being thrown his way before he's up off the ground. And that was, you're going to completely shift the tide of this game over something that maybe you could consider a foul. And even the announcers on the Apple broadcast were like, that's so harsh. You're changing this game. And he did. And it just seemed like he had lost control of that game from about midway on in that second half, it felt like.
Do you remember when Parker went up for that header at midfield and whoever the LAFC player that was going up for it as well didn't jump for it and Parker like went over the top of him? You had mentioned like that shouldn't have happened. That potentially could have been a foul there as well. To me, a play like that is so much more dangerous than what just happened with Mark Hanna.
You can't.
Like, there was no harm in what happened. Like, he just didn't hit him very hard. You know what I mean?
And,
like,
you know... The embellishment going on with the right. You know, the concussion protocol and then let me see if you can run in a straight line kind of stuff that happened in front of us. It was just like,
it's hard to watch.
It's you got to be kidding me. And it was just, and you know, unfortunately, second yellows, I always thought you could review a second yellow whenever it involved a red card, but you can't. And I truly believe if that was the case, I think it would have been rescinded to a yellow. I think it was initial reaction from Dickerson, and I think it was unfortunate because it just totally changed the outlook of that game.
82nd and 84th, Blom yellow, AZ yellow. You had Indy get one in stoppage time. It was like they were handing them out like they were, you call the analogy, they were giving them out. I'll tell you that right now.
I mean, he was Oprah with cars. Yeah. That night. Just, you get a car.
It was absolutely crazy, and I mean, the crowd, I've heard some ref you suck chants in there. Joe Dickerson has heard some ref you suck chants in there. I don't think I've ever heard as loud as it was that night. And just the boos, and people were pissed.
They changed a chant on the north end. Rather than say like St. Louis or something, they said ref you suck. It just felt like it was a good game. Like watching it live and even more watching it back, it was just a good battle like we had with LAFC in the second game last year. Just a back and forth between two good teams. And you just felt like the outcome was completely changed from those incidences.
Yeah, and then a stoppage time goal, make it 2-0, Denny Bwanga again. And that was the nail in the coffin at that point.
Yeah, just missed control. Durkin had to slot back and kind of play a center back role. And it really sucked because I really felt like even though being a man down, we still hung in a little bit. I think
agreed.
That's where we kind of...
There were chances.
That's where we still kind of held the possession meter, I think, which is really odd on LAFC's part, because typically that's where one team just plays keep away, knowing a team's down. But it felt like, which I love from City, we stayed in it. We kept
continued
pressing.
To press, yeah.
And unfortunately, just a header comes out. Durkin miscontrols it, and being last man back, it just sends Bwanga on a breakaway. And then, you know, Bwanga does what he does, chips Berkey there, and sends him home with the 2-0 win.
2-0 win for LAFC. That was the last home game for City that we've had a chance to watch. Took place on Wednesday night at City Park. Saturday night was in Cincinnati at TQL Stadium, as bad went to perhaps worse in a 3-1 defeat there. Cincinnati scored all four goals.
Yeah, so yeah, I was going to say.
They were on fire that night.
Yeah.
Couldn't miss. Different lineup, a lot of rotations, 7 changes in it. 4-4-2 lineup. Is that the first time we've seen that this year? Maybe the second? It's not been a lot.
I can tell you this. We haven't seen it be successful.
No, it's not been great. Berkey, Durr was in. Nielsen stayed in. Hebert also joined him to give Parker a break. Watts played on the other end there. Celio, Kojima, Blom, and AZ. in the middle, and then Klaus and Adeniran getting a chance to link up again, and we just haven't really figured things out there yet.
I just, in a 4-4-2 situation where they're playing parallel with each other, it just doesn't seem to click for them. I would have loved the scene where they would have dropped Klaus back almost into that 10 role, left Adeniran up high, and played it that way. And, yeah, I mean, kind of in typical Carnell fashion, when he rotates heavy. I know he liked to kind of downplay the rotation, saying, like, Blom's pretty much a regular. Nielsen Hebert's pretty much a regular. Klaus and Sam can be regulars. And I get that. But to change not only that many changes, but also change the formation on something that you've kind of found clicking and kind of found working, and then going up against arguably the best team in the league right now, that's where I guess you get a little bit more frustrated going into it. It just was, I understand you got to get a little rotation, you got to get some guys some minutes, but to change the formation and the style of play that we've been playing for the past four games now, just that was where it was a little confusing to me. Hey, if you're a coffee lover like me, then you've got to try some of the best local coffee there is from Postal Coffee. Will over at Postal Coffee is super passionate about his roasting process, and it really shows in every bag. Every small batch is made to order from small visited sustainable farms, so you really get that great flavor and get that care in every order. Also, 20% of all profit goes to veteran suicide prevention. So not only are you getting a great tasting product, but you're supporting a great cause as well. And if you use the code SOUTHEND at checkout, you'll receive 15% off your entire first order. Nothing goes better to start your day than a new episode of South End Supporters and a cup of Postal Coffee. So check them out on their Instagram at Postal Coffee Co. and check out their website at postalcoffeeco.com.
The one good thing, if there was anything good to come out of that, is that Leuven was on the bench and also made an appearance in this one.
Yeah, I also want to give a shout out to Cincinnati in their pregame. They wore armbands with IL for Lona, Leuven's wife. I thought that was a really classy touch by them. Just opening up the starting lineup and seeing that name back on the bench, just with everything that's been going on, and we'll touch on that a little bit later, but it's just, man, it was just so great to see. And I guess one thing that I was feeling pretty hopeful for as far as with the heavy rotation in the starting lineup is we did have a lot of firepower that was available coming off the bench. So my thought was, if we can hang with these guys throughout the first half, maybe get, you know, back to our formation with some subs and get in some, you know, regulars kind of going back in that we've seen, you know, playing pretty well, maybe we could, you know, hang with them and stand a chance.
How do you think that went, Eric?
I was wrong.
Yeah. It was 3-1, final score. This had a feel of something that could have been 6 or 7-1, I think. Berkey was remarkable for a game that he gave up three goals, as good as he's looked. Some of the saves he made, I mean, those are highlight reel type saves. Had an easy one in the seventh. He did come out, tried to punch one out. It was grazed a little bit, didn't really get it out completely. Ends up falling over Hebert on this. So he was like completely out of position off his line. So I don't want to say an easy goal necessarily. Brett Halsey got the rebound and then right at Berkey for the save. So the fact that the shot was right at him, that was simple. But this was an interesting kind of sequence of events, the way that all things happened there. The missed punch out, falling over Hebert, having to get back and get back online, and then having the ball come to him. Man, that was not probably what he would have drawn up there.
No, and man, I know from playing back in college days, and actually our goalie that I played with in college, he's actually living in Cincinnati right now and a Cincinnati fan, so Giesick, if you're listening, lucky. But like, I know like that, and when you see a floated ball as a defender just kind of coming into the six, you just kind of quiver a little bit because you know there's a goalie coming right behind you that is full momentum and yep, eyes on only one thing, and you're probably going to get the back end of it. But yeah, I mean, what more can we say about this guy? I mean, we'll get into more the heroics as we go along, but I really believe, man, if we would have pulled out any sort of result, draw, anything, he would have been starting team of the match day for sure.
Yeah, he was incredible. I want to talk about this penalty in the 26th. It was a Cincinnati goal. That's what got them on the score sheet for this one. Acosta was fouled in the box by Celio. Obviously, you know, the penalty was buried, and we'll cover that. But the penalty itself, the foul itself, Celio gets beat, you know, and he might have been responsible for another one later on as well. But it just, I mean, it didn't look like he made a lot of contact with him. What are your thoughts on this?
I think it's just a lack of awareness on Celio's part. I hate harping on it, but like in this situation, you have to know where you're in the box. You have to know any sort of little contact is probably going to be emphasized. Maybe because Celio knows that he doesn't dive. I mean, he has to know that a lot of other people. And I know the contact was minimal, but you got to also look at this from a ref standpoint. Celio gets beat. All the ref sees is the arm still around the waist of the defender or the attacker. Celio is completely behind the ball, and then the attacker goes down. Acosta goes down while his arm's still wrapped around him. So,
see,
I thought
Acosta's arm went up as well. Like he was pushing off Celio a little bit. Like I thought that maybe the contact was mutual, if anything.
Yeah, but you got to realize where you're at in the box. Yeah. Every time when we're on the south end and anybody is attacking and they get in the box, all I'm yelling is "Don't foul!"
Right.
Like I yell it at the top of my lungs, and it's just. It's just, you know, like we've touched on, Celio's not exactly known for, you know, defensive duties back there, and especially against somebody like Acosta that night who was just playing unbelievable. But I think you got to realize, you know, while I know he's going to give up a wide open shot, and, you know, with Acosta's abilities, there's a good chance he still buries it. I would rather you just let it go, give Berkey a chance at it.
Yeah.
And we've seen him make those saves before, and rather than kind of give away something that, even though it's soft, and I know everybody was like, he went down so easy, but that's what these guys do nowadays when they feel any sort of contact in the box.
Did they look at this at all?
I mean, there it wasn't going to be overturned. Yeah. I mean, when you look at the angles and you see any sort of, you know, wrap around, or especially when he's beat like that, it's going to be given.
Yeah. He made a save, Berkey, in the 30th. I think it got called back because it was offside, but I think it's worth bringing up.
Dude, I wrote it down.
It was, bro. Yeah. This was nuts. Like, I don't even know how to describe it, but just crazy. And again, gets called. It doesn't even count. But, like, just shows you, like, the kind of form that he was on that night, I think.
I was up off the couch more that day with my hands on my head for saves than there was attempts that night for City. I mean, it was just, you know, I saw somebody a couple South End submissions ago a while back say, like, how many more years in the league does Berkey have? And they were kind of worried about it. But when you're seeing these reflexes that he has right now, it's just showing he's playing on a whole nother level. I mean, yeah, you're right. This was offsides and it didn't matter at the end. But like, geez, man, like had it not gone in and something's reviewed and maybe there is an onside, the goal counts. So you have to stay alive all the way up till it. And just a complete reactionary save for him, but also not just a reactionary save like we touched on many times with him. He doesn't allow any rebounds or anything off these amazing saves.
Well, you know, Berkey had 5 of them and City had 4 shots on goal. So you're right. You were up with your hands on your head more for saves than you were. And this one didn't count in that 5.
Yeah.
So very interesting there. 49th, another Cincinnati goal. It was Yuya Kubo. It's a fun name to say. He scores on a... on a through ball played by Acosta. Man, that guy's name's going to get said more than Denny Bouanga said in the last segment, unfortunately. Looked like a bad breakdown here, I think, defensively by Celio.
Yeah, the issue that I had on it was just quick movement. The biggest thing that I noticed with Cincy, and I want to get back to this point a little bit later, but where they were the most dangerous was their quick 1-2 passing. Where we were struggling a lot was just holding on to the ball a little bit, not too long, rather than looking for the quick pass. The ball moves quicker than feet. I know sometimes when you have space, you want to just dribble, 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 but sometimes moving it around quicker, shifting the defense is the better option. And where Cincinnati was tearing us apart that night was just their quick 1-2 passing, and it was led by Acosta. And he just finds himself space here. He gets the ball, and just with composure, he sees that Celio cheats more towards the wing. But what Celio does when he cheats more towards the wing to take away that pass is he leaves wide open the pass into Kubo, who's in the middle towards goal. If you're Celio in this situation, you kind of want to shift more towards your goal. Give him that wing. We'll take it out there. Make them do something with it out there rather than this, you know, wide open pass in the middle, especially when you're trying, you already know that you got two guys with you. Take the lesser of the two evils, and the lesser of the two evils would have been, you know, shifting more central. I know that's very easy saying, Monday morning center backing and all that type of stuff. But, I mean, it's tough to react in that situation, but you got to be thinking, again, positional awareness, realizing that you do have two guys. Give them the wing, then try and jump out and defend them there. Rather give them there. Kubo's wide open, slots it in.
Yeah, and, you know, again, this just continued the, it seemed like relentless pressure, I should say, or whatever it was, City just did not have an answer for anything Cincinnati was doing. And I get it. Cincinnati is one of the top teams in the East. They've been one of the top teams in the MLS for a bit now. And it was a frustrating one, man, just all in all. Now, taking a look, you had an opportunity. AZ had a decent look there in the 52nd. Didn't hit it very well. Diving save made by Celentano. And then right after that, in the 54th, City gets on the board by just an absolutely, I don't even get what was it Matt Mazzocca did. Just kicks it in the back of his own net. It's like him and Celentano were not on the same page at all. It's the City press. I mean, look, you're seeing it. This was somewhat reminiscent of something you saw at times at the beginning of last season where teams would just make mistakes. Mm-hmm. But this was a bad one. And there was a lot of laughter, it looked like, on Cincinnati's part, which tells me two things. This was embarrassing for Mazzucca, for sure. But also that they weren't a lot, like, they weren't really worried or, like, concerned about anything.
Yeah. Yeah, I know Sam was on the press, and I guess, you know, reactionary seeing that out the left or out this peripheral on his right, he thinks I can't go out wide with this. And I understand, you know, what he was trying to do, you know, lead Celentano with a little bit of a pass, but Miazga just, I mean, he kind of almost rifles this back, and Celentano's kind of flat-footed, not expecting right. it, and like it was
wasn't
just
close to him.
No, and it was just kind of it took me a minute to kind of realize what was even going on. I was almost thinking like maybe there was a whistle blown and he just kind of kicked it back there the way he did, but then I see us kind of like, it was even kind of like a muted celebration. We were like, yay, but like, right. like we needed that. But I also thought, though, who knows? Like,
right,
that could
course.
Be something that completely turns the tide. Like I touched on at the beginning, we have a lot of options coming off the bench. Like I said, if we could stay in this and shut down, you know, kind of what all was going on, maybe we could catch another one and get out of here with some sort of result.
And especially the way that Berkey was playing at this point, right? I mean, just, and he got better and better. Let me look at the save that he made on Orochano in the 62nd minute. Hits one with his left foot after dribbling through the defense. Just a tremendous diving save by Berkey. And it just continued. Like, every opportunity it looked like Cincinnati was taking. And these were, like, high expected goal opportunities, too. Berkey just laying out for it and keeping him out of the back of the net.
I want to know what he stuffs his right glove with, because it must be, like, steel. Because that thing doesn't budge when he dives. And all these saves were just the Orojano shot. Yeah, he's diving to his right, and it's just a stiff arm laid out. And again, sends it out for no, you know, it's out for a corner or whatever it is, but it's no rebound opportunities on these amazing saves that he's doing. But the reaction that he has, I mean, he cuts it back on his left. He doesn't have much time to really get to it. But, and even later, the one from Kelsey, I thought that was even more impressive because Kelsey kind of stutter steps a little bit, just trying to get the ball out from under his feet, which means Berkey, kind of like we touched on with Lloris with the penalty, he can't commit and leave his feet or get flat-footed or reset or anything like that. He has to stay on his toes during that little like stutter that he has for when he finally does get it out, and he shoots this one just as hard down to his right again. So as you know, great as I almost want to say as great as Cincinnati was on that night, it's almost scary to think, had he not had the performance he had, what the scoreline really could have been like.
Well, I mean, Orochano had another one in the 77th where he tried to go far post and Berkey made another diving save. And I'm assuming St. Louis supporters traveled really well to this. I'm not sure if I heard it correctly. It sounded like there was some Berkey chants going on late in this game, like after that save.
It was probably Cincinnati. They were probably just as impressed.
Yeah,
they were like,
I'm
give it to them.
Positive. I'd have to go back and listen to this again, but I think I heard some Berkey chants happening at that point. Go back, like rewind it a little bit, that Indy cross in the 71st. Yeah. This was crazy, man. This was an opportunity that I'm sure that AZ would have liked to have had back. Lays out for it. He almost took a header right in the post, by the way.
Oh, did he? I didn't see the follow
through. Oh my god, dude. I mean, he kept sliding and like, yeah, he was, I think, pretty close to that thing. But just totally just no regard for his body and giving himself up for this opportunity here, just didn't get it.
Yeah, man, that was the most frustrating moment on City's end for me throughout the night. Indy came in and he just plays a beautiful ball across the face of the goal. AZ gets the step, and he has a header, and I understand what he's thinking. He thinks, I have to go back the way the goalie is coming from, because typically that's, you know, goalie's momentum is going to be coming one way, send it back, he can't react in time. But to me, you got to get this on frame in any way.
Yeah.
Even if he makes a save, there's going to be spillage on that. He's not getting that one out.
I don't think he's making the save.
I don't either.
If he gets it near post like he wanted to,
or anywhere on goal. And so I know that's tough. You're running full speed. You're, you know, trying to adjust to the ball at that moment. But to me, in that situation, it has to be on frame. And I think, you know, it was just kind of frustrating because throughout the night and just kind of through the past couple of times, we've been, you know, hoping to see a little bit of, you know, glimpses that we've seen in the past with AZ, and we just haven't been seeing it here lately. And I felt like that could have just really shifted everything for him going forward as far as, you know, confidence and everything like that had he buried it.
Cincinnati got their third in the 80th minute. It was another defensive breakdown, I think, you know, across by Acosta, found Santos, who buried it there, unfortunately. And I think that's the talking point sort of for the entire game, is not anything on Berkey necessarily. It was just like defensive breakdown after defensive breakdown after defensive breakdown. That's how it felt for me.
This one was just, I mean, it looked like the warm-up training drill where you're on one-touch passing with people and there's people in the middle. They were just working around, and that's where they were the dangerous the most night. I felt like the times that we did shut down Acosta was when he did try to dribble or he tried to do a little bit more. But when he was just looking for the first pass outlet or the first chance that he got, that's where Cincinnati were the most dangerous. And I thought that was the big glaring difference between the two teams in both games, with LAFC and with Cincinnati, that separates us. It just feels like sometimes we're a little bit slower on the ball rather than just looking for those. I think City could be such a dangerous team if they just link up the way kind of Cincinnati was, with 1-2-touch passing in the box, get people the space, and then finish from there. And so they get there. Acosta gets a step on Durkin, and then nobody, again, that back post run that has been killing us all year. I know Indy tries to get back late. I don't know if he just didn't see that it was going to be worked out to Acosta, but I think at some point you got to try and find back post runs, and it's just slotted in. And it's just an easy tap in for Santos at that point. And man, it just really, after that point, it dimmed the highlight that happened a couple minutes before that with Leuven coming back on the field.
Yeah, Leuven came back on in the 75th. There was one thing that I think was worth bringing up. You had a Leuven corner in the 89th, which was cool to see, right? He comes back on, he gets a corner, ball played out to Oestrakh. And tried to go near post. Diving save by Celentano. Really good save by Celentano here. But it was awesome to see Leuven back there where he belongs, taking the set pieces, taking the corners, and trying to create chances.
Just seeing that. We were all texting in the group, and I think it was Dave said, like, I see number 10 coming in. And, man, I, like, got chills when he was running on the field, especially the whole speech that they did prior to and just explaining, you know, what that guy's doing out on the field with everything that's going on right now. But it was just so good to see him back out there. I feel like, you know, one thing we've touched on a lot, you know, a lot of people are quick to shout, we need a new striker, we need a striker, and really we need a playmaker. And you look at somebody like Acosta, that number 10, who can just kind of, you know, sit in the middle of the field and look for those 1-2 passes or those creative passes that the defense isn't seeing. Leuven has that capability, and we've seen it throughout the year. So just seeing him come back, I know it's going to be a slow process for him getting back just with fitness and everything like that. But just seeing, knowing that he's coming back and we're going to maybe hopefully get to see a little bit of that creativity and that offensive indecision that we've been having in the final third kind of get better, it's just awesome.
3-1 defeat. Again, Cincinnati scoring all four, unfortunately. And just like that, in 1 week's time, you've dropped a couple of games. And now you sit with three losses, unfortunately.
I do want to make one point just at the end of that. You know, Cincinnati now, in the past 2 years, Supporters Shield winners last year. I believe they also, Miazga was Defender of the Year last year, if I'm not mistaken. Celentano was runner-up behind Berkey for Goalkeeper of the Year. Acosta MVP. Yeah. But you look at when they came into the league in 2019, they had just terrible start to their year. They actually had 3 years since that time where they won the Wooden Spoon, which the Wooden Spoon is when you are the worst team in the league.
That doesn't sound good.
Now you look at them now. I think we're starting well ahead of where Cincinnati was when they came into the league. So I know a lot of people are panicking right now. You see it all over social media, like City's done, all that. We're not even halfway through the season. I mean, I don't know if it's just they touch on it a lot. It seems like throughout a lot of the games, almost one of the worst things that could have happened to us from last year is that we did start 5-0 and the run that we had last year. I think the expectations are so sky high that when, you know, you go up, Cincinnati right now is behind Miami, barely, on the, you know, the supporter shield race. They're yep. the best team in the league. And we also played a heavily rotated squad. We gave a few debuts. We've, you know, Akil Watts, who I thought played really well on the night, you know, that was his first start and really
right.
most minutes throughout the year. And I thought he did well. I think, unfortunately for him, he's battling for a spot right now with Tautland. I almost wish, you know, Akil had a left foot so he could give Markkanen a little bit more of a run. I think Durr showed a little bit of, you know, nerves. And I think they said, you know, he was yanked at half. They're looking for a little bit more going forward. But he just seemed like he was trying to get his feet wet. Kojima said as well, going into the game, he was nervous. And as well, he should be. It's his first MLS debut. And then you're going up against the league, reigning league MVP. I mean, that's a tough situation for you to be put in. So while I know right now things, you know, especially coming off back-to-back losses, I think this team does have the talent to be a good team. Do I think we, at this moment, are going to be Western Conference champions again? No, but we knew there was going to be a little bit of drop-off in the year. Do I think this team is still a playoff-capable team? Yes, I do. Yeah. And you can't be jumping ship now and just because, you know, a few bad results. We've seen few times what City can do when they are playing their game, and I think it's coming. So if anything, I hope they look at a game like this and take notes from it, especially like you look at like Indy or even AZ playing in that 10 role, not being the biggest statured guys in the world. But you watch Acosta, he just makes himself so big and just never seems to lose the ball. And he's like 5'3". So it's possible that they should study the way he plays that game. Quick 1-2 passes, looking to get rid of the ball, looking for those creative passes. Kojima, like he said, I loved his post game where he's just trying to learn and get himself better. And going up against a player like Acosta is only, unfortunately, only going to help his game. And now that he's got Leuven back in training, he says he asks him questions all the time. So it's great to see that. I hope they look at this game and see, you know, what a team like Cincinnati, who started out so terrible when they came into this league, what they can do. Maybe a few additions here and there have really propelled them up that way. But at the same time, it's going to take a little bit of time to get to that level and stay consistently at that level. So while I understand things haven't been the greatest of late, it's going to be okay. Everybody just needs to
and
relax
a little bit. You're still in a playoff position right now, ninth in the
table.
Even after two losses. Like, you know, you haven't lost any ground really at this point.
And this is just a tough run.
It is.
LAFC, Cincinnati. Yeah. I know Seattle, you know, will be a more competitive game. But then you got Miami the week. I mean, it's just a tough run. Every team, every sport has just one run where you're looking at those run of games and you're like, if we can get things, any sort of points out of any of these games, you look at that as a victory going forward. So I hope that they almost take this game personally and they build off it.
Well, here's the good news, Eric. Southend Stands pool is open, which means Southend slushies for everyone. The issue that I'm having, I got a little winter weight that I need to shed before pool season. I get it. It's open, right? Like the pool's open, it's ready to go, but I've got a 20-year reunion coming up in a few months as well. I'd like
to
be.
Is that where we're at now?
That's where I'm at. That's
I'm
not
close.
Where you're at.
No,
but that's
close.
Where I'm
not
at.
Far off.
Eric, I need to get in shape for that. How can I do it, brother?
Well, you got to go see everybody over at Ready to Live Wellness just to get yourself in the perfect shape that you could ever be from mind, body, everything. But if you really want to get a good personal training session, make sure you go check out everybody at Ready Fit Training. If you're looking to take your fitness and your career to the next level at Ready Fit Training, we offer the unparalleled opportunities for personal trainers, whether you're interested in one-on-one training sessions or they lead dynamic group classes so you can do it with a bunch of friends. Ready Fit Training provides the highest commission rates in St. Louis with every session paying $40 or more per trainer. So if you're looking to kick off that training career that you have going, this is the place to go. All your trainers are freedom to make their own schedules and build their own businesses, all with expert marketing support from Ready Fit. If you have an entrepreneurial mindset and your passion for fitness, we provide the space and tools you need to succeed. So join Ready Fit Training today and turn your fitness dreams into reality.
That is Ready to Live Wellness at 1530 South Kings Highway Boulevard and follow them on Instagram at R2L Wellness. Well, let's find out what is going on around City right now, around City Park, around this squad that we love. And to do that, we're going to bring back in the Monday Morning center back. It's time for news and notes for the Back Post featuring Dave Wyckoff, the Monday Morning center back, the host of the Two Footed Tackles podcast. Remember to follow him on Twitter at 204acle. Dave, welcome in, sir.
Hello again, everyone.
How are you?
He pluralized it this time.
I wrote it down. I said I have to make sure it's two-footed tackles.
That's great.
An important thing.
You did fantastic.
Thank you
so much.
I appreciate it. Dave, you were in attendance on Wednesday night
as
well.
I was. My mother and I were in the South End.
That's the place to be. That is the place to be.
So immediate takeaways from the South end. Not totally thrilled about standing up the whole time.
Okay. Maybe, well, 149.
Maybe that's maybe that's me getting aged, but not thrilled about it. Really loud, really into it, everybody the whole time. Real nice mix of newer fans, very enthusiastic fans, also a little bit older, you know, more knowledgeable fans that maybe didn't appreciate the standing also. So, but no, it was great. Different viewpoint. I will say I prefer the upper tier.
Do you?
Compared to being on the
Let
field
level. Let
me
ask you this, though. Like, during the game, I get it, but you can't possibly like being up there at like 6:30 or 7 o'clock when
no.
the sun is just
no.
beating down
and,
on you.
And right now, we're in probably the last month or so of the season when it'll start being where until probably 10 or 15 minutes after kickoff, the sun will be right in the eyes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a fantastic
and
point.
And 105 degrees.
Right. And 105 degrees. So that's when, you know, you are fashionably late.
Yeah.
You go get yourself maybe a couple adult beverages.
Okay.
Also some of those Philly cheesesteak fries that I just cannot get.
Yeah, where's that at?
Olive and Oak.
Yeah.
Shout out, Olive and Oak. Great stuff.
Where's the Olive and Oak vendor at?
Second tier, north end, right in the middle.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go to, I guess, behind the upper level of the supporter section.
I've sat in a couple places, new places this year, right? I sat in the West End. I sat in the Ultra Club as well. So just being in, like, different parts of the stadium, because even when I was in the Ultra Club, right, I'm on the second level, so I'm, like, walking around up there.
Yeah.
There's so many new places. I had it all figured out last year. Like, I can't figure out all the food options right
now.
I'm overwhelmed.
I still need to do, like, just another. I keep thinking, like, oh, everything's still in its same spot. I need to do, like, a full lap pregame and just get, like, everything.
And eat everything?
I mean, don't tempt me with a good time.
There's a lot of good pizza in there, but, like, Felix's, I feel like that. I'm going to tell Carmen Stone, you got to get Felix's into City Park because that pizza is outstanding. They've got pizza places in there, but to get an opportunity to get Felix's in the stadium, that would be, like, second level.
I'm talking about summer body, I don't know if that'd be good for me. It's week in and week out.
You don't need to lose a pound of winter weight.
Oh, I got winter weight to lose, David.
Not a pound, I appreciate it. Especially for that reunion. I don't think that you have to do much to be at the...
It's 20 years, Dave.
It's just too much.
Crazy.
I won't be attending.
Oh, again. Well, you're missing out. You missed the 10 as well.
For the 20th consecutive year.
We'll get you at the 40th.
Yeah, if we're all still around.
Dave, what's going on around City, man?
Yeah, news and notes at the back post. I'm excited. Another new segment for the South End supporters. Glad to be a part of it. So the biggest news story, I guess the biggest thing that we want to point out was last week, and I think everybody's probably already aware now. It's been all over the socials. It was a big deal. Leuven, you know, announcing. And by the way, he did not owe this to anyone.
No, I thought that was almost the more impressive thing. I don't know if impressive isn't, but like courageous thing.
Admirable.
Like, he didn't have to come out. He could have just left it at it was a family matter. But to not only, you know, in the press conference that he did and to hold his composure while doing and saying and everything, it was just amazing on his part.
But he got into his wife's, you know, medical issues and what's kept him away outside of the injury. And again, I'll echo your sentiment. Just very admirable that he got it out there, didn't owe it to anybody. So obviously all of City Nation wishes them the best. Glad that he's back, but you know, you got to take care of what's going on at home first. That's the most important thing.
Agreed.
Moving on. So City 2 are going to take on Houston 2 Wednesday night at 7. They're rolling.
On fire, man.
On fire. Yeah, a couple of Agüeros here and there to get the full 3 points.
No, that's not on fire.
They're on fire.
We're using that as a verb now, huh?
Yeah. The Agüero is when you bury one in stoppage time to take home the win.
Or it's when you cry the rest of the day and in misery. Either way, depends on who you look at.
Yeah, it's all perspective.
Man cheater city. Living in the league.
On the lighter side of things, more if you want to file this under comical, the league disciplinary committee fined Markanić an undisclosed fee for not leaving the field in a timely manner. I wonder if they fined Dickerson
an undisclosed fee for not leaving
the field in a timely manner.
That is so crazy.
I got to tell you, I'm so glad that Eric touched on that. He pretty much had the same opinion that I had. Like, I am not a person to blame the outcome on a referee. I'm very much behind the Respect the Refs campaign. They're part of the game. They're not the ultimate reason you lose a game, but you have got to understand the moment a little bit better than that.
The moment there. I mean, to again, first yellow, Sure.
Absolutely.
Throw it out there. Yeah. But you have to realize the way the game is going and really what just occurred, it wasn't malicious or anything like that, but to just completely derail that game for City was just...
I don't even know how, within the laws of the game, you find it necessary to throw out a yellow. At first, what I thought was it was because of the simulation.
I did too, yeah.
I thought it was that I thought he called the initial foul, which there can be a foul and also a violation for simulation.
Yeah.
Kind of like in hockey, you've got the embellishment. I could not believe, you know, when it came out the next day that it was because of the accidental contact to the face. Number one, if that was intentional malicious contact to the face, that's a straight red. It's not a yellow. So he didn't even get that right.
That's a great point.
Yeah, just really, and you don't want to ever lean on these guys, but I mean, come on, you know, this is the top level of professional soccer in this country.
And are you really even given a second yellow for embellishment?
That's even tough too. Just understand the moment a little bit better.
Yeah.
So let's move on. Let's talk about payroll a little bit. So there was an article that came out, and what was the source of the article?
I mean, it was throughout quite a few, like Fox Soccer had
so,
it, I believe.
So there's an article that came out that disclosed that Leo Messi's $20.4 million contract with Inter Miami exceeds the entire payroll of all but three MLS teams. So this is individual, not collective. But his contract exceeds the payroll of everyone but Toronto, Chicago, and Nashville.
How is that possible?
I still cannot get a grasp
on it. And what's crazy is that fee is just his playing fee. That's not. Remember, he got like all the incentives for like.
He's got like shares in the league. And stuff.
Apple TV Plus, revenue broadcasts, and he's got like a. I mean that, it's it. I mean, it's not like you can't say he doesn't deserve it.
No.
But what the issue is how do you have that plus the X amount of list? And I think Busquets' contract is like third in the league, and that's at like $17 million. I think City's entire payroll they released it was like 12.4 or something like that. So you think about, like, you know, I know everybody's like, you got to spend money, but you look at also two of those teams, Toronto and Chicago. I mean, they're higher payrolls, but yet they're not exactly stellar.
Yeah, it's about how you spend it and how you use your resources. I worry that the MLS does not identifying that this could become a potential problem where they become Major League Baseball, in that you could have, if you don't figure out a way to create some sort of a hard cap like the NFL has, you run the risk of having, you know, the haves and the have-nots. And I just don't think that fits well with what the MLS model, with what they want it to be.
Yeah, but don't they, sorry, Dave.
Yeah, no, you're right.
But don't they want to, I mean, it feels like they want it to be more Europeanized, and there's not a salary cap there.
Right, but you also don't have oligarchs and multi-billion dollar owners for every club, right?
I mean, or 100 teams that is involved in a promotion relegation system.
I mean, you look at some of the smaller clubs, and I'm not sure what the value of Burnley is right now, but you know, Burnley cannot, but the reason Burnley goes up and down between the Premier League and the Championship is because they just cannot match salary that it takes to compete in the top half of the Premier League table every year. So that's why you see all this fluctuation. That's why you see a team like Bournemouth sort of the same way. Since you don't have that system of relegation and promotion, I think there's a big risk of just creating a lot of cellar dwellers, basically. It's just perennial cellar dwellers. And I don't want to see that. That's kind of what baseball has become. I get that analytics have leveled the playing field quite a bit. But I don't think that that's the direction that they want to go. And I realize that Messi's a generational player, but you know, there's going to be another generational player. You know, what if when Kylian Mbappe gets into his mid-30s, you know, he has the same sort of interest.
He's expressed that he wants to come here eventually. Like, what do you do to change that, though?
I mean, I think the answer is a hard cap. I think that's what they have to do. Now, again, you run the risk of, you know, maybe alienating some of these players that want to all play together. Clearly they all want to be in Miami.
Yeah.
But why aren't there groups of play? Who's to say that there wouldn't be a group of players that wants to go play for one of the New York clubs?
Well, the other thing too is, I know the attraction is always the New York clubs and the LA clubs, but say they go on a run of bad years, like, you're not going to want to go join a team that, you look at like when Steven Gerrard came over to like play for LA Galaxy, they were pretty bad.
Yeah,
like,
but Miami wasn't exactly stellar.
Yeah.
Before,
I mean, I think,
but it's also a lot about exposure. too, right?
I mean,
what's the biggest market to get exposed to? Albert Pujols didn't go to the Los Angeles Angels because they were going to be good.
Right.
He went there because being in L.A. exposed his brand, made his brand as big as it possibly could be.
Even when you think about taxes in California, he wasn't making a whole lot more than what he would have been making in St. Louis.
Exactly.
But you're right, the brand recognition,
it's
all that.
It's about the brand. And I understand that. You know, these players, especially towards the end of their career, they have to maximize their earnings, even though most of them have already made more money in one lifetime than they could ever spend.
Right.
But moving on. So this was the big one. This really lit up the socials over the weekend. So there have been multiple tweets that have gone up, come down, what have you. It's doing numbers.
Oh, yeah.
I told you it's doing numbers. So the initial reports were that Charlotte was in talks with Marco Royce. And because they own the Discovery rights to him, owning Discovery rights to a 34-year-old superstar is irony, then how would any other team be able to negotiate with him, particularly St. Louis City SC? Because, you've got the Berkey connection and there are just rumors flying and nobody really knows what to make. LA Galaxy are also said to be in talks.
Let me break down Discovery rights and this is new to me and it's still something that I'm trying to learn, but Discovery rights are, if a club wants to sign a player on a Discovery list of another club that has a higher Discovery priority, which means Charlotte, on the player, it may offer that club $50,000 in general allocation money in exchange for the right to sign the player. The club with the player on the Discovery list will then have 5 days or 3 days on the secondary transfer window to either accept the general allocation money and pass on the right to sign the player or make the player a genuine, objectively reasonable offer. So now my also understanding, and this is where it gets all a little fuzzy, is to have put them on the Discovery list, the MLS has to believe that there's a general interest and possibility for that club to sign the player. Reports, like you said, are all over the place, but it's reported that Royce has no interest in signing Charlotte. Wouldn't that then negate the Discovery list? Because if he doesn't want to play for them, but also it's back and forth because there's no real proof other than words say that he doesn't want to play for Charlotte. It's just a weird.
Now, there is no transfer fee for him because he's a free agent, right?
Correct.
So then it wouldn't be that big of a deal for a club like City to pay the $50,000in GAM, essentially, right, to get the rights to him, correct?
If the fee would actually only be $50,000, okay, and not be a negotiable of thing.
We've seen in the past that I saw somebody reported that, like, when Gareth Bale joined LAFC, Miami had the Discovery rights on him, and apparently it went up to like $75,000, which again, depending on the player, you look at that as like maybe, not as much, but when you're also, I don't even know how much general allocation money we have available to us, it could be, $50,000 could be a big chunk, like we were just touching on with
It's the Wild West. It's the absolute Wild West. It's the same thing with the salary.
I think it's just going to be, and Royce, I believe, came out and said, he's got a Champions League to concentrate on around.
Right.
He's not going to focus on anything other than trying to, get dormant in a Champions League. So, unfortunately, I believe the Champions League in like what, 2-3 weeks? It's still a while.
It's
so this is just going to be, you see it with every league, transfer, silly season, all that type of stuff, whatever you want to call it. You see reports, you see them, you almost get your hopes up, and then before you know it, they're signing for Chelsea, and you're just like, this team.
Great.
I never wanted him anyway.
I miss Roman.
So I think while there is still, some excitement in there, I think City fans also have to come to terms with, if it doesn't happen, you can't just blame the club. Like, you can't just blame the owners and stuff for it not happening. Who knows what all is going behind the door, especially when you have a club like LA Galaxy coming into the mix, where who knows what all money they could have available as well. You don't want to get into a bidding war necessarily. And like we touched on last week, you go for Royce as long as it makes sense, because you don't want to just get yourself stuck on one big contract and then have the rest of the team kind of suffer.
As long as it fits what you want to do. And it's not like City are getting any of that extra secondary market money, which segues me into our last little piece of news, that it was reported now that City tickets on the secondary market are the second most in the league, only behind Inter Miami. What do we make out of that?
Well, we may be seeing a dip here at some point, I would think. I'm curious as to what tickets will be like for Seattle coming off of two losses. This goes back a little bit to what your point was a little bit earlier, Eric, that just about like,
yeah,
maybe the interest is waning a bit with frustration. I don't know. We'll see, I guess, what things look like in the coming weeks, especially if the form continues to kind of be what it's been.
My only worry is we saw it at the beginning of this season for those who had the year contract when they signed for their season tickets, and we saw like 30% boost, like some pretty high percentage boosts on that. I hope, you know, City's also maybe seeing this and doesn't go as drastic coming up here in the future, because you would hate to where it gets to where people are just priced out of games. I don't know how many people I've met out and about that said they want to go to a City game so bad, but it's so tough to afford tickets. Sure. And I mean, there's been times where I've seen like supporter section tickets going for triple digits, and it's kind of, you know, those are like $25, I think, you know, at base value.
Yeah.
And so you do see some crazy numbers being thrown out, and especially when you have certain teams with certain stars coming to town. And so I do imagine that it would eventually, you know, continue to go down. Obviously Miami, there's a reason behind that. I just never wanted to get to a point where like people can't even afford to go to games.
Yeah, and it's also like, look, Miami to St. Louis, I mean, the cost of living is a little bit different. I mean, it's a small...
I don't understand.
Small to mid-market. Let me explain it. Have you been to Miami before, Dave? It's a small to mid-market Midwestern town, right? And it's like, it's not... If you were to take a family of four and you didn't have season tickets and you went and bought them on the secondary market, if you buy anything inside the stadium, I mean, you're probably looking to spending $500 to $600 potentially, like over that course of a night
for a regular
couple
season
hours
game.
For a regular season game, like it is pricey. And remember, the ticket price that you see on SeatGeek is probably not what you're paying unless you've toggled on to include fees, because those are going to get tacked on as well, and they're upwards of like 25% or 30%, I think.
You see it all the time on the socials, people selling their tickets there and being like, avoid the fees,
because right.
You know, you got to add on quite a bit more. And so, I mean, I also think that right now there's a demand, and I think people look at it that way. You hate to like think about, like, you look at Ticketmaster right now and what concert tickets cost. It sucks seeing like some of your favorite bands come to town and you're thinking, man, I just can't justify going to see them, and thinking like, I hope they come back again, but it is pretty wild. Now, I do see sometimes where somebody puts their tickets online, it's like, all right, dude,
yeah,
really? Like,
right.
There's always a running joke every week where somebody lists their tickets for like 10 grand
yeah.
and somebody posts it and it's like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
And it's just like, there's a joke aspect to it, but it is, it's tough if you don't have season tickets. And like we talk about, you want seeing the familiar faces, but you also like people getting to take in a
yeah.
city game for the first time.
Not to get into like a major economics discussion here, but I think you saw this with tickets just in general and a lot of entertainment stuff when COVID hit, right? Because like organizations, companies were like, man, we got to make back the funds we were losing.
Yeah.
So they started pricing things higher, and then people were buying them because they were desperate to get out and do things. And then it's just like, well, we were able to do it. Let's continue to do it until we can't, and we'll maximize the amount of profit and revenue we can bring in for the, you know, company, whatever organization that may be. Like you said, you see it with Live Nation, you see it with whatever ticket that's out there for concerts or sports or, you know, musicals or, you know, arts, theater, whatever it may be. It's all jacked up right now, and until it fluctuates and, like, you know, some sort of way comes back to the mean a little bit, it's going to take people staying home, unfortunately, for that to happen. I mean, look at Cardinals secondary tickets right now. They're not very expensive, and that's because nobody's going to games. So as long as people are going, man, they're going to continue to charge it.
Well, yeah. The Cardinals don't think that staying home is the logical way to protest performance, but that's a conversation.
Yeah,
for
we'll
day.
Talk about that offline.
I do think it would be great if there was a little bit of demand regression, so, like you said, the first-timers could have the opportunity to go there and not have to break the bank to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
I think we'll eventually see it. You look at like a lot of other teams that are successful and, you know, have great crowds every game. I've looked a couple times seeing like what an away ticket would cost, and they're dramatically, you almost think that they're a bad team, because you're like, man, like I remember Nashville looking at that and it was like $30
yep.
like on the secondary market.
Kansas
so,
City, you could go get all-inclusive tickets at Kansas
right.
City and probably spend less money traveling there and then traveling back, then you would be able to get into City Park at times.
But then you'd have to go to Kansas City.
I get it. Just saying, though.
last little bit of news. It wasn't on the list here, but U.S. men's national team released the training camp roster today. No major surprise, except Sergiño Dest injured.
ACL, right?
ACL, yeah. Typical number of Berhalter MLS inclusions. Shaq Moore always on the roster. So
yeah.
A little inside, but... That's your news and notes at the back.
Dave, appreciate it a ton, man. Thanks so much for stopping by again here. We're going to have Dave back on as part of this new format change coming up later on in the week. Like I said, Thursday, Friday, somewhere in there. We'll do the postal preview there and then get into those Felix Pizza Pub South End submissions as well. Eric, where can people post those at?
Yeah, make sure you're following us on all our socials and send in your submissions to, on Instagram. We're South End Supporters. Our Twitter is SES_podcastSDL. And then make sure you're following us on our Facebook page to keep up with all things South End Supporters.
Dave, thanks again for stopping by, man. It was a lot of fun. News and notes from the back post. That's going to become the hottest segment in St. Louis City podcast world, I would think, at this point.
Maybe the universe.
Maybe the universe. That's certainly possible. Eric, thanks so much again, as always. Thanks for listening. Thanks again to Ready to Live Wellness, 1530 South Kings Highway Boulevard. Remember to follow them on Instagram at R2L Wellness. Remember, if you are looking to get swole like Eric Cole, remember to check out Ready to Live Wellness. As always, thank you so much for listening. For Eric Cole, for the Monday morning center back, Dave Wyckoff, this is David Heck. You've been listening to South End Supporters. We'll see you next week. And until then, let's go City.